Hello, Dreamer. We've been expecting you. Well, not you exactly. Someone like you. What I mean to say is we are prepared, and we've taken this old house and turned it into a stage. Actually, many stages. As many stages as there are rooms. And you just go from one stage to the next until you find the one you like. And then it's out the back door with you. But up until that point, oh, the wonders you will see. What's behind this door? Shall we see? It's the talk show, starring your host with his guests. And now, hello, welcome everybody. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome to my talk show. And that's a great description because that's what we do. We talk and show, and you watch and listen. It's like show and tell in school. So authoritarian, isn't it? Not like show and ask. I'm going to stand here and not say anything of substance for a few minutes, and then we're going to begin to parade some actors before you. Actors eager to fool you and convince you of their exceptional nature when, in fact, they have been chosen at random. Thank you again for choosing this stage of your life, and please join me on this couch so that the lies I tell you will seem more sincere, so that your guard will fall, and I can access the points in your mind beyond reason. Would you like that? All right. Fantastic, I thought so. Our first guest tonight is my old friend, Lou Register. He's a manual laborer, a friend, a brother, a believer in things unseen. Lou?
Hey, Hardy. Thanks, everybody. All right. Good to see you, Hardy.
Good to see you, Lou. You are my first guest. I'm glad you called me a guest, since I was brought here against my will and I was wondering how I'd be treated. Oh, we plan to treat you with all the respect you deserve.
Thanks, I guess.
So, tell us about the things you think we should know about you that would make you seem valuable as a person.
Well, as you know, I work at a loading dock, unloading trucks that deliver goods, and taking those goods into a warehouse, usually on a forklift. But sometimes we have to actually lift boxes manually.
Ooh, that sounds fascinating.
It is.
Do you know what's in the boxes?
Sometimes you do. Sometimes the boxes will say things like pride, or man's inhumanity to man, or radios.
Which boxes are the heaviest?
The ones marked grief. We get them regularly mixed in with the ones marked Formica countertops and hoses.
Oh, what type of hoses?
You know, I don't know.
You're a big man, aren't you?
I'm large for my age, I guess.
And what is that?
A blessing and a curse.
No, I mean, what age are you?
Oh, reason, I think, or jazz.
Speaking of jazz, you have a new album out.
Nope.
And we've heard it's great.
Not possible.
Would you like to do a number from it?
Don't see how I could.
Oh, come on, Lou. Folks, would you like Lou to do a number from his new album?
Okay, I will.
The goblin men have the sweetest fruit. The sweetest fruits have dark gray clouds. The winds sweep in, the gate swings shut, the trees bend over and bow to death. I mark the days with cold, dark stones. The hills change over from green to gold. The voices moan, the mountains fall. The end of the earth is the end of it all.
That's wonderful, Lou. Oh, that was terrific. And when is the album due out, and where can we get it?
Well, there is no album. There's only that. That was it.
Oh, that sounds terrific. Now is the time to start saving our pennies for it, I suppose.
I suppose.
All right, well, after this brief commercial, we're going to be right back with the inimitable Butchie Spinoza.
Come by these apples.
As sweet as your memories.
Come by the apples of effortless will.
Wrap yourself in the golden cloak of expectations.
And sleep.
Sleep.
Sleep the sleep of innocence.
Apples.
Welcome back. Fantastic. Welcome back, everybody. Our next guest is short of stature, but a giant presence in the world. He is a longtime friend of Lou and I, and his connection to the philosopher who shares the same name is questionable. Please welcome the incredible Baruch Butchie Spinoza.
Hi, everybody.
Butchie, my man.
Hardy, Lou.
Hey, Butch.
I gotta tell you, on the way here, I had the craziest experience.
Oh, one of your great stories. Do tell.
So on the way here, I'm walking down Filler Avenue, and this car pulls up. And this guy is like, get in. I say, you're crazy. I don't just hop in a car with strangers. And this guy says, no, I'm no stranger. I won the Nobel Prize for Literature a few years back. And I tell you my name, but it wouldn't sound familiar because I'm not from around here. So I figure, hey, if this guy is a successful writer, what harm can there be in entrusting my life with him? So I get in the car. And the whole thing looks like one of those crazy restaurants with all the bright lights. So I'm practically blinded. He says, can I get you something to drink? I say, sure, I'll have a whiskey. He says, I don't have whiskey. Is juice okay? I say, absolutely not. Unless, if by juice you mean whiskey. So he leaves the car and he comes back a few minutes later with a flute. And he starts playing and dancing around and saying, there is no greater song than the song of life itself, and his greatest joy is to sing for his God.
I think I know this guy.
That's it?
Oh, that's fascinating.
Right? Anyway, I bail at this point because the car ain't moving and I got places to be. So anyways, I got a new book of plays.
Oh, tell us about it.
You know what? I'd rather show you.
Are you going to perform?
In a matter of speaking. So I've been heavily influenced by Beckett, and particularly his wordless plays, and even the ones with words if you throw the words out.
So what's the piece you're going to be performing today?
It's called Play and Song Without Words or Music No. 4.
Oh, so there's three others?
No, it just took me 4 times to get it right.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Butchie Spinoza performing his play, Play and Song Without Words or Music No. 4. Oh, Unbelievable, Butchie. I loved it.
It was very evocative.
I think so. I feel like I'm very intellectual. Some call it theater of the absurd, but that in and of itself is absurd. Everything is absurd. It's like calling it theater of the stage.
I love having you two on the couch.
That's what Freud said. What?
You accidentally said, truth is a lie, when you meant to say, that's what Freud said.
I did not. You're wrong.
No, nope, nope. It was a lapsus linguae, or rather a Freudian slip.
I'll slip you.
Come on, you guys, don't fight.
Which reminds me, I also have a video out of my backyard bare-knuckle gardening. No gloves at all. I just plunge my hands right into the soil.
Man, that's hardcore.
I'm hardcore.
You know what? Let's fly to the moon. Count down, Butchie.
What are all these controls?
Oh, they're for show. The ship goes wherever it wants. They're just here to give you the illusion of control.
That's important for mental health.
I feel like I didn't even decide to do this.
It decided you.
That doesn't make sense.
Hey, I remember there was a kid's show on when I was little, and it starred Chuck McCann and Bob Denver.
I know what's coming.
And it was called Far Out Space Nuts.
Go on.
And so it was about these two guys who had jobs loading the meals onto a rocket ship. And one of them was pretty bumbling, Bob Denver's character. And so they're loading the food in, and Chuck McCann says, lunch, because that's what they're loading. And so Bob Denver pushes the button that makes the ship go up into the air and head for the moon.
Go on.
And so Chuck, flabbergasted and panicking, said, I said lunch, and you were either not listening or had complete disregard for my words, because you either intentionally or by accident ignited the engines and sent us careening into space, forever lost from our old lives, from the comfort of our home, tumbling aimlessly into strange worlds beyond our control and ken. What foul monsters and dark trials await us. What horrible fates because of your lack of attention, your inability to be present and aware.
I remember that show. I think Ruth Buzzy was on it occasionally.
There's a name you don't hear much anymore.
What? Afra Ben?
No, Ruth Buzzy.
Oh, I like Afra Ben more. What a strange writer. I like a lot of early proto-feminist writers like her and Christina Rossetti.
I've been reading a lot of Rabindranath Tagore lately. It moves me.
Well, I hope somebody moves you, because I'm not. Last time I helped you move, you promised pizza.
I bought pizza for everybody there.
That wasn't pizza. Real pizza you can't get outside of Pittsburgh.
Okay, guys, let's focus on the task at hand, space travel.
So where are we going?
Well, since we're traveling into space, I think we might already be there. Space is everywhere.
Life happens in the spaces.
In chess, maybe, but in Chinese chess, it happens at the intersections.
Like go.
You go.
You go first.
Okay.
Wow, the moon sure is empty.
You see emptiness, but I see buildings and trees and people.
Yeah, I don't think this is the moon. I don't even think we blasted off.
Whoops, let's try this again.
Okay, press the lunch button.
Gotcha.
Here we go. Ooh, look outside the window, guys.
It's just like a movie.
Stars everywhere.
Some movies don't have stars, though. They have up-and-coming young actors.
True.
They seem so far away, like close-up lightning bugs.
The universe is a mad, 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 mad universe.
It is.
You are in an empty room. It is all white and glowing, like the scene in a movie you haven't seen, but from which you've been shown still photographs. You assume it is some sort of test, something to be solved. All art is something to be solved. Everything that you do not understand immediately is a riddle. It is better to pretend you understand and die fighting for that rather than to admit that you do not know something.
Well, that doesn't sound right. I think it's important to admit when you don't know something.
What if you don't know anything?
I honestly don't know.
Well, I know one thing. Listen to this. Wanted. Three guys to model for cartoon logo for auto parts store. Must have three distinctive looks, e.g. one has a mustache, one has glasses, etc. Apply at Cartoon Modeling Agency, 3 Ogden Whitney Way.
Well, we have three distinctive looks.
Not really. I'm exceptionally handsome, and you two are basically the same type of homely.
Well, that's one way of looking at it.
Do you really think we could get modeling jobs?
My aunt was a model. She was the yummy biscuit baby. That's her on the yummy biscuit box.
My step-grandfather modeled for the SO gasoline logo.
The... That logo is just the word Esso.
Yep, that's what he looked like. That's him.
I mean, do we qualify for this job, though? I mean, we always need the work.
Remember that time we had a surrealist talk show?
Oh, gosh, do I?
Flashback.
What?
Did you just read the stuff in parentheses in the script?
Yes. Oh, I feel like an idiot.
That's what I love about this talk show. Anything can happen.
I've read the stage directions before. Audience laughter.
The sound of footsteps in the rain.
I don't like the idea of spending time in a haunted mansion.
First of all, this place isn't haunted. There are no ghosts. Second of all, it's my great aunt's condo.
Yeah, but it smells like her.
That's not her. It's the scented trash bags.
Mmm, nice.
So the idea is we inherit this place if we can spend the night here.
Yep.
Well, that sounds easy.
But the catch is, it's haunted.
It's not haunted. I've spent the night here before, and it's not easy, but it's not because it's haunted.
Then what's the problem?
It's boring.
Well, we could watch TV.
There isn't any.
Okay, we could go online.
No internet.
What about board games?
None.
Cards?
She never had any.
Books? Is there a library?
Nope.
What is there to do?
I'm telling you, absolutely nothing. It's torture. After about an hour, you're going to wish a ghost was trying to cut your head off.
I remember a movie from the 40s where these comedians were having to spend the night in a haunted castle. But then, as time went on, that cliche began to lose popularity, and it moved to the cartoons, which co-opted most of the tired humor of previous decades.
We could tell stories.
No offense, but I've heard all your stories, and they were boring to begin with, because you have nothing to offer as a person.
But what do you mean, no offense? That was completely offensive.
I'm just kidding. Come on. I totally meant to offend.
Maybe we could just walk around the complex. There's other condos here.
You can't. Covenants.
What do you mean, covenants?
The condo covenants. They say guests are not allowed to walk around the grounds. Owner occupants only. We have to stay inside. Also, we can't be seen by other residents or they'll call the cops.
Why?
I don't know. Very strict covenants. Technically, nobody under 75 is allowed in here. I had to lie a bit.
Man, that's oppressive.
The only thing I could think of that might be fun is she has a portal into another dimension. I used to play in it as a kid.
Butch, why didn't you say so?
Because I thought that'd been done to death. I'm bored of other dimensions.
Where does the portal lead?
To heaven.
Heaven? There's an actual heaven, or is this a joke?
No, heaven, where good dead people go.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, it leads to heaven.
That's a real place?
Who knows? Other dimensions and possibilities don't have to be literally real to exist. It exists as a concept, therefore it exists. People can describe it even if they haven't seen it. You haven't seen Bermuda, but you can describe it.
I've totally seen Bermuda.
Yeah, me too.
Still have a cousin there.
Yeah, I've been a bunch of times.
No way, there's no such place.
The heck there isn't.
Listen, I'm not going to stand here and debate you about whether there's a Bermuda or not. I've got more important things to do.
Like what?
Like work on my book of poems.
You write poetry now?
Of course. Want to hear some?
No.
No.
I'm small. I pretend I'm not, but I am. I'm small and I stand at the side a lot. In fact, I'm a sidekick. Kicked to the side. Shoved off of the main road and into the high grass or the ditches where I disappear because I'm small. I try to make my voice big. I try to make my story big. I surround myself with smaller truths so I'll seem giant by comparison. I scream to cover the sound of my crying. I shout to drown out the sobs. I hold my head high because otherwise I'd shrink into myself. A prisoner of my fears, my own jailer. I'm angry, but if I were a giant, I could afford to be gentle and forgiving. I'd pick up difficult people by their tiny collars and gently tell them they need to change. No one would challenge me out of fear, but I'd reassure them, all the while using the fear to fulfill my own fantasy of being quiet, loving, still.
All right, any comments?
So are we supposed to critique only Butchie's poem or the whole show?
Well, that's up to you.
I like the giant imagery. It reminds me of the Salyard poem, I wish I were a giant instead of a small man.
It's nothing like that!
Butchie, just try listening. You don't need to rebut every observation.
Brian doesn't know what he's talking about. Can I make a criticism about the show in general?
Go ahead, Don.
It's not my favorite. I enjoy Butchie's poem, but I found the rest of the show unsatisfying. Oh, that's all, Hardy.
Oh, way to throw me under the bus, man.
You drive the bus, you crawl under it when it breaks down.
Don, what would you have liked to have heard that you didn't?
Well, I enjoy when I'm in the show and I get to say, question.
What?
No, that was just an example of me saying, question.
Can I throw my 2 cents in?
What is it, Lou?
I think Hardy did a good job.
Thank you, Lou.
It's hard doing a weekly show. Of course there's going to be failures and duds, things that don't work, ideas that seem to go nowhere, or sloppy thinking and poor execution.
All right, okay, Lou.
What's the matter? I'm defending you.
Can we get back to why my poem is great? I was bearing my soul here. Can I get a little love? I enjoyed your poem, Butch, and your play earlier. Thanks. I want to be taken seriously as an artist, unlike some people who are content being glib.
Do you mean me? Are you talking about me?
I don't think Butchie was referring to you specifically, Hardy.
Yes, I was.
Now, we want to be honest here, but let's not be aggressive. Hardy, why don't you do some self-critique?
Why? Why would I do that?
You mean anticipate other people's dislikes?
No, thank you. That would affect what I said. I have to say things no matter what. I have to please myself. I want to honor my craft and be aware, but I'm not going to internalize my critics. I have a good critic in there already. Me. I know what I'm capable of. I know at what level I'm working or thinking or trying. I want to die on that hill, not somebody else's.
Fair enough.
Can we get back to my poem, please?
Oh, welcome back. Welcome back. I'm here with Butchie Spinoza and Lou Register.
Oh, those memories. I think a lot of people confuse me, Butchie the person, with Butchie the character.
I get that too.
People come up to me and say, Ship Jive, which is nice. That's one of those instances where the real me and the character overlap.
I have people who think I really work at a loading dock.
But you do.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember what the differences between real me and fictional me are.
I know that fictional me is slightly more emotional than real me. Like, fictional me reacts wildly to things Hardy says, when in real life, I really don't care or listen to what he says.
What about you, Hardy? You find yourself confused about who the real you is, or what's real and what's performance, what's confession and what's entertainment?
Yeah, I struggle with that all the time. I don't know who I am, so how can I tell you anything when I don't know exactly what I believe? I'm struggling too. That's why I don't like to say anything definitively or tell you things on the radio.
Well, that makes you wishy-washy.
Well, I can tell you basic things, like the bathroom's over there, or don't eat that, that's rotten.
Well, that's a chestnut.
I know, but don't smell it. Can you imagine eating that?
Well, they're food.
Well, I don't know, man. See, that's why I like the show part of show and tell. I would rather show you something, and maybe you can figure it out. Because when I try to convince you of something, I may be lying, because I may be lying to myself. Do I know who I am exactly? I'm struggling with that every day, trying to figure out who I am. I may be a fraud. I don't know. If I were trying to convince you that I was really smart or something, I better really be smart and I better really believe it, or it's going to be a struggle, right? And I'm going to feel like a fraud and everything's going to crumble. I remember reading a paper in my hometown one time, and there was a baron and a baroness who were going around and convincing rich people to have them over for lunch and stuff like that. I don't know, they're wearing like sashes, and so I'm the baron. And they were going around in social circles like that. I don't know whether they were borrowing money from people or they were just getting special treatment, but it turned out they were nobody. It was just, it's like All My Children or something. That's not, that's just Lanny Vlasic or something. That's not Langley. So, and I was wondered about them. I thought, were they doing it on purpose? Or did they really think they were a baron and baroness? I mean, there's kind of a difference, right? If you think you're one thing, it's like Blade Runner, or I did that identity show not long ago. It's like your Swamp Thing. Do you know who you are? Are you really fooling people, or just maybe you just don't know? So it's hard to tell people anything. Like I said, I like to show them. And I've talked about doing show and tell in school before and how I bring things and know nothing about them. And I thought that was the point. You know, I'm going to show you these are box of skulls that I got by the river. And they're bones. I think they're fish bones. And that's what I'm going to show you. And I'm going to tell you where I got them. But I can't tell you anything about them. I don't want to teach you something because it might be wrong. But people like to have that feeling of being important. Oh, there's nothing wrong with that. We feel helpless in the world, I think. And so you want to say, I want a little credit or something. I want to feel special. There was that old story of Prince and the Pauper where they changed places. And then they changed places back again, the Prince and the Pauper. Then they changed back again. And then they changed back. And then they said, okay, now which is which? Like that. Now that was, that's like a three-card Monty version. There should have been three of them. And they scrambled them all up. Now which is the Prince? I don't know. Does the Prince even know? Maybe it turns out he wasn't the Prince all along. He was switched at birth before he remembered. That could happen too. You find out you're adopted. You're really adopted. Does that make any difference? We're all adopted, aren't we? We all come into this world. Who knows where we come from? I'm pretty sure it's under some sort of big leaf or something. Maybe we were brought here by a giant bird, some kind of wading bird. Does it have to be a wading bird? I think I was brought here by a terror bird. Those are giant land-dwelling, I don't know when they lived exactly. I think around the time like the saber-toothed tigers and stuff, not dinosaur times. Do you get the dinosaur times? I don't get it anymore. I've switched to the Dinosaur Herald because the Dinosaur Times, I think, had a bias towards meat-eating dinosaurs. I said, this news is about raptors and things. And I got relatives who are hadrosaurs. I want to read something about them and positive news, like that big thing on their head. What's it used for? I think it's used to make their call echo. Oh, that's my hadrosaur impression. Every once in a while, science will do something like that and say, this is what Neanderthals really sounded like. We've looked at their skulls and everything, and they sound like this. Hello. How are you? That was a film one time. I saw that, and the guy was doing that. Rah, 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 rah. Oh, wow, Neanderthals, that's not what I sound. I thought they sounded like, Joey Ross or something. Ooh, ooh, I'm a Neanderthal. Like that. I guess I got that from It's About Time. A lot of things I thought I saw on TV, I thought were accurate. You know, Gilligan's Island, I thought I didn't think that was a real place necessarily, but I did think the actors had gone to an island to do it. And they were living there in huts. They had subjected them all to that. No wonder they were so stressed out. I imagine that. No wonder Bob Denver was smoking a lot of weed or something, because he's like, man, I'm stuck on this island with these people. I got nothing in common with them, except Jim Backus. Oh, he'd get together and go, listen to my Mr. Magoo voice. But we don't know what's real or not. I mean, we do for some things. Like, I imagine my coffee cup is real, unless I'm taking a philosophy class, and then you go, no, to be is to be perceived. Well, I don't know whether that's right. SES per cuppa. To be is to be. All right. Shut up. I'm sorry. But, I mean, the reality is relative, isn't it? I mean, the coffee cup is real. And we should all agree on that. And if you get playing around, you say, I got some free time and I'm relatively well adjusted, then I can talk about subtleties and things like that. But as far as other things, that's probably not going to feed the hungry. Why should we care about one another? I don't know. For me, part of it is biological. When I let myself let go of some of my preconceptions and everything, I start seeing myself in others and I start feeling things. And also people, you got to love them. All my love has come from people. Every time I've been loved, it's come from a person and some various animals. But I'm never sure whether that's really love or not, because sometimes when the dog's licking my face, I'm thinking, well, because there's sauce in my beard. Or the cat is kind of, you know, snuggling up to me. And I'm thinking, I don't know. I think this cat would be gnawing on my intestines if I passed away here. Who knows whether they eat you. Maybe you want them to. Say, hey, don't let me go to waste. Come on, I want to be, that's the, I wonder if that's going to be a new pet. Pet funerals. Not for the pet, but like sky burials, because I want the birds to eat me. I want my own birds to eat me, actually. The bird's thinking, I'm a parrot. I'm a vegetarian. I don't want to eat. Occasionally I eat a bug by mistake, but I don't want to eat my owner. I'll bite. I'll take a bite out of him. I'll take a chunk out of his arm, said the parrot. But other than that, I don't know what kind of, you'd have to have some kind of carnivore. You'd have to have vulture. A vulture is a pet. And even the vultures won't eat, I'm pretty sure they won't eat carnivores. They just have to, you know, nothing wants to eat a meat eater. That's funny. That's the end of a food chain. Bugs or something. I'll eat it. Bugs will eat anything. But a lot of, you know, crows won't. Okay, well, I don't know, man. This doesn't smell. This raccoon smells funky. It smells like maybe it ate an old hamburger. I don't want it. I've seen crows and vultures just turn down a carcass because it was an omnivore. So I'm not going to eat that raccoon. Raccoon sat on the side of the road in my neighborhood for a long time. Nobody wanted to touch it. So when I was thinking about getting, I go, man, how can I get it and drop it in acid or something? And I'll take the bones, but I don't have any use for the rest of it. What do you need with the raccoon bones? I don't need them. But, you know, it's good to have, I'd like to have skeletons around because, I don't know, I might want to reanimate them, have a little skeleton friend, make a dance. Bones are funny when they're dancing without a flesh on them. Have you seen this? Only in cartoons. I'm sure it could happen. Though, I'm not so sure that I want to convince you, though. I'm not going to, I don't want to drag you into my self-delusion. You know, when I introduce myself, people say, hello, I'm John Smith. Hello, I'm Julie Smith. And I'll say, nice to meet you. And they'll say, what's your name? And I'll be like, dude, I don't know. I don't know. I guess I gotta come up with something. So I'm Hardy White. I'm pretty sure. I think. I don't know. They don't want to hear that. So I try to be a little bit confident. Say, you know, I'm Hardy for all intents and purposes. Or as some people say, intensive purposes. That could be too. Oh, the language is ours. We can change it. So you're using that word wrong. Well, you know, I bought it. I can stick things on it. Now, can I? Except if it's art, if it's copyrighted. Then I bought it, but you still somehow own it? I don't understand that. Well, it's such a good idea, I don't want to let it go. All right, a lot of people are like that with art. Say, oh yeah, you bought that painting, but really, I still own it. Hey, I don't know, man, I don't know. But that's the whole problem with buying things. What do I own? What have I bought? I can't make a copy of it. People want to do that with food, too. So you got that seed, but don't try to get seeds from the thing that grows. Wow, because I still own it. Wow, okay. That's the owning thing problem. Well, you think people shouldn't own things or people? I don't know. I don't want to tell you. I have an opinion, but those are things I'm still working on. Oh, opinions are like little things I'm tinkering with in the garage, little inventions. I'm still working on them, still trying to get the bugs out, literally. If I take it into my shed, it's going to get bugs in it. So even if I'm working on this invention. It's almost done, but it has cave crickets in it. Hopefully, they will eat themselves, since cave crickets auto-cannibalize. Is that true? Yes, they do. I'm not exactly sure under what circumstances. Where they're just laying around, they go, man, that leg looks tasty. I think I'm going to take a bite out of my own leg. Whoops, now I can't get around. Don't we do that, though, somehow? Think about it. You can work that out in poetry. Poetry is like that. It's like some kind of machine or something, like the holodeck on Hogan's Heroes, where they go into the... Not Hogan's Heroes! Star Trek, where they go into the holodeck. Hogan's Heroes is a little like Star Trek. That's why I get it confused. There's various uniforms. It's militaristic. Stuff like that. It's unintentionally funny. It's intentionally funny. It's offensive in ways. They go into this holodeck, or what my friends thought was holiday deck, and which is the same thing, really, because they take little vacations in there. And then they can create safely any scenario they want. Sometimes the machine breaks down and they're actually in peril. But that's just to make a good story. But they go in there and they can create any kind of scenario. This is like a poem. Now, a lot of people write poetry for different reasons. First of all, I pronounced the word poem wrong. I say poem instead of poem. I'm sorry. Poem. Poem. I pronounce a mirror wrong. I say mirror or something like that. But a lot of people do poetry maybe for the wrong reasons, if there is a wrong reason. One would be to impress others, to think that you're a creative genius or something, that you're extra sensitive or something like that. People want to be thought something. I want a label. Oh, I want one so bad. Sometimes I think that. So I want to be thought something. You know, oh, are you a minister? Are you a rabbi? Are you a poet? Are you a captain? You know, you want some title or something so that it precedes you and people can look at you and make a positive judgment before they meet you. And I always want that, but I can't. Because then when I start exploring myself, I go, well, I'm not that label, though. I'd be lying to people if I said that's what I was. I'd have to make a lot of excuses. I'd have to do a lot of backflips and everything. I was reading Thomas Merton wrote a book about Chuang-Tzu, one of my favorite Taoist writers. And he wrote this beautiful, insightful book of poetry based on the writings of Chuang-Tzu that he read in translation, because I don't read Chinese. Thomas Merton doesn't read Chinese, but he had a lot of time on his hands because he was a cloistered monk. And he really identified with these concepts and these philosophies and everything, but he couldn't say that literally because he was a Catholic monk. So we had to say, oh, well, yeah, you know, I understand these, but blah, 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 blah. He had to do a lot of backflips because he had to keep his identity as a Catholic monk. He couldn't say to people, oh, gosh, you know, my beliefs just, they stray from others. They stray from dogma. I just have a lot of things, and I contain multitudes like Walt Whitman. That's what I am. I'm a Walt Whitman. I'm a Walt Whitman clergy. I'm a Whitman clergy. I'm a Whitman sampler clergy or something. That's what... I'm desperately struggling for identity, for a label. Call me something. Call me Ishmael, will you? You started that story. We were in the bar, and you started the whaling story, and you never finished. Okay, that's the difference a comma makes. Call me Ishmael. I want to hear about it. I want to hear about Queequeg. Call me Queequeg. I want to hear your perspective on it. Call me Starbuck. I want to hear, don't call me Ahab. I don't want to hear, I've got no patience for you, sir, with your embedding a coin in the mast like that. Come on, whoever sees the whale, I can't be up in the crow's nest all the time. I've got to be repairing rope below deck. It's not fair to me. The fellow in the crow's nest is going to see the white whale before I do. And what is the white whale? The white whale symbolizes the human brain. That's what a brain looks like, is a whale, right? In a way. Take a brain. Next time you have one, but don't take yours out because you can only take it out once. It's not like an engine in a car where you take it out and you go, oh my God, I can't get it back in, and you call your friend, Sid or something. He goes, I'll get it back in for you. It's not like that. So don't take it out. But look at pictures. They got pictures online. And the human brain looks like a whale, like almost like a white whale, all right? And that's the brain is floating. What is the sea? The sea is experience, all right? So when Ahab is chasing the white whale, I'm completely, utterly making this up. This is not, you're thinking, man, God, I've never looked at it that way before, because it's probably wrong. But I'm just showing you. But I could say it with such authority, you start to believe me a little bit, don't you? And you know what? I could accidentally be correct. That's another thing. No, you don't know. That's why I try not to tell you anything, or I take it back immediately. Because at least that way, if it is true, I've said it. And if it's not true, I've disclaimed it. So that's what I like to do. Is when I show you something, that's up to you. That's what I like art better than telling. You know, I'm just going to put this stuff out here. What does it mean? I don't know. I can tell you what I sort of hoped it would mean. But I don't want to convince you, because what if I persuade you to do something wrong? I'm sure there's been like cult leaders like that. They go out there and they persuade everybody to do something, and then they change their mind and they got to persuade them some other way. It's exhausting. Hello, everybody. I know I told you yesterday that we are to wear a flower over our right ear because the universe is unfolding in such a way, geometrically and geocompondently is a word I made up because I saw it in a dream, that we are to wear the flower in the right ear. Now, yesterday, an angel came to me in a state I was, to tell you the truth, I was throwing up. And the angel came to me and was holding my head and said, you know what? It's the left ear. So I hope you haven't spent too much money on right ear flowers, but I'd like you to move it to the left ear. That's the correct thing. Was the right ear correct for the time? Possibly. But things have changed. And now also I'd like you to take off one sock and then fill it up with golf balls and then have that be your golf ball sock. And that's, so we're going to walk around like that. And they shall know us from the golf balls in our sock and the flowers upon our ear, upon the left ear. And if you want to be like me, look up at me. I see a lot of you down there not looking at me. And if you want to be like me and you want to stay in this church, cult, whatever it is, cult has negative connotations. But if you want to be like me, you're going to have to, first of all, you're going to have to pay attention. And I know that you are interpreting my anger for confidence, but it's just the opposite. It's insecurity. That's why I'm yelling and bullying it. I want you to fear me so that you will obey me. Otherwise, you know, Butchie in his poem was like, oh, I wish I was a giant. And then people would fear me, and then I could be gentle. Because I have no choice as a small person. I can't be gentle because nobody fears me and wants to do what I say. Right? So I don't have the luxury. Only from a position of strength can I exercise compassion. That's what some think. Only if I have dominion over you can I have peace, because then you'll fear me. And then I can be a king and I can say, you know what, you need not fear me. You needn't fear me. Please go about your business. I am a benevolent dictator. That's King Friday. That's one of my favorite Mr. Rogers characters. That always seemed a little wrong to me. Say, well, that doesn't make sense. I've got to be able to scare you. I've got to be able to be so strong that then I can show compassion. What if I'm just a little tiny thing? Well, you're not in the position to do any harm, so you can't show restraint. That doesn't seem exactly right to me. That doesn't seem exactly right. You know, we're all going to be victims at some level. There's no giant that's immune from something gianter. And to be the largest thing in the universe, you would have to be what we all, the concept of a creator or a god or something. That's the only thing. I guess that's why we have respect. The one thing that can crush us all. But what about the tiny thing? What if the truth came not from the largest thing in the universe, but from the smallest? Something that we could all destroy. Something that we could all destroy every single day. That held the key to our happiness. That held the key to everything. And it was just something that we crushed every day. A still small thing. A little thing. Smaller than Butchie. All right? Can you imagine that? Show me. I try to show you all the time. I come at you from a position of ridiculousness. A position of weakness. I am nobody. I am a voice on the radio. You say, I don't know anybody outside of the listening area knows this goofball. Who is he? Is he famous? No. Anybody know me? No. Who are you, Hardy? Who are you, Hardy White? I'm nobody. And I say that with great pride. I'm nothing. I'm weak. I have no influence. I get invited to no fancy parties. Every once in a while, well, a bar mitzvah every once in a while. So come on, big, go, come to it. Come to our wedding or something. But other than that, you know, I'm ordinary in the extreme. I'm not the smartest person in any room at any given time. Right now I am, because I'm alone. So I'm probably the smartest person in the room. And there's a ghost going, no, you're not, you dummy. Sorry, ghosty. And there's pictures on the wall of people smarter than me, so now I feel guilty. But, you know, I think that if you're going to show anything, show something ordinary. Show something like everybody else. And since I'm insecure and full of self-doubt, since I'm an equal mixture of love and fear and anger and compassion and cruelty, I thought, well, that's a good thing to show. I'll just show me. And if I show me and I just do it recklessly, do it without forethought, doing it, blanking my brain out and let you see everything, pour everything out, open my junk drawer, pour it out shamelessly, show you what's in there, not pretend to be organized, just show you everything in there, let you cull through it. It's like when you go through somebody's house that's a hoarder or something, I'm just going to look through here, see what's in there. I'm fascinated with what's in your storage unit. The storage unit is my mind. You are welcome to it. If it's going to help you, please look at it. Look at it, examine it. Take a look at Hardy White. See what you can use. See if there's anything that you can use. I'm showing you. Anything you need here? Is there anything I can do for you? I can't do it for you, of course. You're going to have to come take it. There's this, all this things. These are all my grandfather's tools. Any of them helpful to you? I think this one. What's it look like? It looks like a big pair of pliers. I think that's for very stubborn nose hairs. There's some nose hairs, the roots go so deep, they go back. You start pulling out of your nose, and it goes back for generations. Your great-grandfather feels it in the grave. Oh, man, that's making my eyes water. Yes, that's how deep they are. Get them nose hairs. Use them pliers. What are you talking about? No idea. I'm sorry. I guess I should have had an idea before I brought it. I guess I should have known the origin of this box of skulls when I brought it to show and tell. But I just thought it was interesting. I had questions, and I think questions are brilliant. I think questions are exciting. I think riddles are interesting. I like to be confused. I like to go to fun houses. I like to see movies where I don't know what's going on. I like to read novels that have things out of chronological order, so I have to guess at what's happening and when it's happening and who it's happening to. I like to be confused. I like it. And maybe you do too. But some people want things delivered in order. Some things that they want, they want a stew, but they want all the peas and carrots and pieces of potato all lined up. I don't want them all lined up. I like them all messed up. I like a good burgoo, not the kind with squirrel in it. What's burgoo? It's a stew they got around here, and some people put squirrel in it, but not me. Why? Because I don't make burgoo, so I don't have to. The squirrel problem never comes up. I mean, I'm not big. I don't. Squirrels, take them or leave them. I don't eat them, but I don't kill them. I don't even curse them because the chipmunks in the backyard are a much bigger problem. Here's the problem I have. I have chipmunks. They make tunnels. Okay? That's not great in the yard, but whatever. That's their nature. So they make these tunnels. That's not the problem. I let my dog out. I got a dog. It's a combination. I don't know what it is. Rottweiler Terrier or something. It's a crazy dog. Anyway, dog goes nuts, chases the chipmunk, finds the hole it went in, and then starts enlarging the hole, digging it, and often just digs up the graves of Confederate soldiers. That's how, which there are none around here. That's interesting. But digs up just holes that are like a foot wide, a foot deep. Isn't that something? Oh, and then the holes are much bigger because the thing I love made it. Isn't that a contradiction? It wasn't even the chipmunk. The chipmunk lured it. It was the big thing trying to find the chipmunk that made the big hole. I know I'm going somewhere. That seems poetic. I'm going to write it down and work it out later like a problem. That's what art to me is. You create a problem and then you try to solve it. And maybe it would have solved itself on its own. But there's got to be something that we do while we're alive. I like the parts that we smile and we feel good and people are happy and they're dancing and they're singing. Singing songs of joy. That's the closest. I think if there was a creator and I was brought before it, them, her, he, they, I say, quick, what's the best thing? I think I'd say, like, singing a happy song or something stupid like that. But I can't think of anything better. I know there's lots of cruelty, lots of things I'd want to avoid saying. But what is the greatest joy? I think that. Maybe dancing, if I could do it better. But anybody can kind of sing or move or, well, not exactly. I guess not everybody can. Not everybody can hear. I don't know. What brings you joy might be individual to you. Oh, I can't believe how lucky I am to be in your, even though I don't know who you are, that you're hearing my voice. It makes me feel more alive, even though I could be dead by the time you're hearing it. Oh, well, I hope not. It's a chance. I might be flying soon. Oh, traveling scares me. So does staying put. Everything frightens me. Because I guess just biology, I know that part of my brain is going, stay alive, stay alive, staying alive. And I see not staying alive as a sort of failure, you know? But so I'm fighting that. I'm trying to live and be happy without being constantly worried about things. And it's tough. Oh, my goodness. If you figure out how, let me know. I won't necessarily trust your answer, but I'd be interesting to hear it. I like people who say things with confidence, unequivocally. I won't challenge you usually. I don't really get into fights online or anything because people say things and I was like, okay, all right. How about that? Isn't that interesting? Because I don't know where they're coming from. I don't know whether they actually believe that. It's tough, you know? I get into arguments, but they're usually silly. I haven't gotten into an important one in a long time. It's not that I can see all angles or anything. Maybe it is. I don't know. I'm a cubist. You know, I see everything at once, and it's very difficult for me to narrow it down to one particular angle, one particular side. I see an infinite amount of sides. Are they all equal? No, none of them. They're not eaten. There's no such thing. They're just all what they are, I guess. It's a big burgoo, and sometimes it's impossible just to pick out the squirrel because the squirrel's gotten in there. It's made a tea out of its squirrelness. I've been on the radio for a while now, which freaks me out. I don't mean just a while now, 52 minutes or anything. I mean I've been on a few years, and I always, even when I started out, there was lots of hand clapping, like I'm a simpleton, you know? But the reason is because there's a little me in myself. There's a little part of myself, a gentle me, a joyous me, and it gets buried. It gets buried in my guts. It gets buried under, it's digging in the sand, and the sand collapses back onto it. And sometimes I have to dig it back up again. I want to make sure that it's still there. I don't want to lose that part of me. I don't want to lose the little child inside of myself. It's not that I want to be childlike. I just want to keep that with me too. I want to understand that the joy hasn't gone anywhere, that I can bury it under anxiety and anything. But I need that to be able to feel things. And I know I want to feel things. And I know that the world is difficult and there's so much pain out there. And I'll take it. It scares me every day that I love people, that I have people that are close to me and I love. It frightens me to death sometimes because I think, what have I opened myself up for? What grief, what pain in the future? So I try to snap myself back to the present and say, all right, just be here right now. Don't worry about that. That'll come and you'll feel something bad and you'll get through it. And there's going to be joy mixed up with the pain. And you understand that there's no getting the squirrel out of the burgoo necessarily. But we can have these, let's not mar these moments, right? Not everything has to, you don't have to bring the squirrel up constantly. We can just say, look, I picked something good out of here. Let's look at it. Is that a piece of potato? Is that a tooth? I don't know. Let's examine it. Let's bring it. To show and tell, because sharing is a wonderful way to sort of figure things out, to have wonderful experiences, That's why we gravitate towards art and towards parties and towards celebrations, towards gatherings. We're all kind of looking forward to something like that. Sometimes if people are getting sick and dying, they have one event they want to make it to, one gathering. They want to see people. Some people, if they know they're dying, want to have a party, see all their friends. Because they can say, how could they have joy still knowing they're dying? Oh, it's always going to have that hanging around, that temporary thing. It's always going to be there. You look and you know, you got to open yourself up for joy, I think, and be sort of fearless, knowing that tomorrow you're going to be fearful. So I'm just so thankful that we can have these moments in time together where we can steal joy, we can rob a little joy, like little mice stealing a little piece of cheese, run back to our hole, sit down at our table that's really a spool of thread. Maybe it still has some thread on it. Who knows? Is that like rope? How is it proportionally to us? And we sit down on matchbox and we enjoy our little tiny piece of cheese together. And we look into each other's little mousy faces and say, oh, I love your little beautiful brown eyes. They look to me like two, like some kind of jewels or something. Oh, now you're flattering me. I don't know. It's your whiskers. When they twitch, it warms my heart. And I know that there's a big mean old cat outside that wants to eat us. And I know that we stole that cheese from a mouse trap that has chopped the head off of old Jake. He went in there first, shunk, got him right on the neck, but then we got the cheese. Regardless, Mo, Larry, the cheese. Mo, Larry, the cheese. I like to say things dramatically like that, but they don't make any sense. Maybe you're laughing. That would be wonderful if I could get a little laugh out of you. Lighten things up. I know a lot of you have challenges. Your lives are hard. I recognize that. Enough people saying that to you? Do they know that? Do they think everything is just like these celebrities drinking champagne and wearing their gowns and complaining that they got the wrong omelet or something like that? Do they realize what their fellow humans are going through? Do they even know? Do they see how that sounds? To be complaining about those things when some of us we only have one life, you know? And if it's full of fear and pain and loss and agony, and maybe somebody could help us and do something about that. Oh, I reach out to all of you. If things are going good right now, share it. Oh, share your joy. Share what you got. It makes it feel better. You'll understand soon. You'll understand because you're all going to march into that darkness. It will encroach on you and say, well, what will I have then? What will I have, Hardy White? You'll have your true self. Come on, reach out. We got to do it together. Show love. Open yourself up. Unclench that fist. You don't need it. Let it go. Breathe out. Those people you think are enemies, those others, breathe it out. Bigger than that. It's so big. It's bigger than that. Got to let the petty go. There are large battles, but what you're not going to overcome is the sameness to other human beings and creatures. You must recognize that others' suffering is your suffering. And only then can we find a place of joy and peace. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online at WFMU.org. Thank you, my friends, for joining me, and I will see you again next week.